Krishna said, my dear brother, he's just welcomed Sudama and treated him so wonderfully, embraced him, then taking him by the hand to a private place, he said, my dear brother, do you remember how we lived together in our spiritual master's school? When a twice-born student has learned from his guru all that is to be learned, he can enjoy spiritual life, which lies beyond all ignorance. Tamasa paramasrute. My dear friend, we'll reach Sri Vishnu Chakravartita, Kaur's comment on text 31. It is mine, Sudama doubted, because Krishna worships me in this way. Though I am so lowly, does he actually recognize who I am or not? To dispel this doubt, Krishna reminds Sudama of their school days together in 12 verses, 31 to 43. Krishna said, do you remember our living in the Gurukula? By knowing the true nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a Brahmana can transcend material existence. It's 13 verses. But in any case, my dear friend, Krishna continues, he who gives a person his physical birth is his first spiritual master. And he who initiates him is twice born as a twice-born Brahmana and engages him as a dvija. Dvija ter iha sambhava, who gives birth as a dvija, is more directly his spiritual master and engages him in religious duties, is indeed more directly his spiritual master. But the person who bestows transcendental knowledge upon the members of all the spiritual orders of society is one's ultimate spiritual master. Indeed, he is as good as one as my own self. Certainly, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on this, so he's speaking Guru Tattva here. Krishna said, in human life there are three gurus. One's father, the one who gives upanayanam, and the one who teaches about me, meaning Krishna. Of these, the last is most worshipable. The father, who makes possible our birth in this world, is the first guru. He who gives upanayanam, teaches Gayatri Mantra, and engages one in sanctified activities, satkarmanam, is the second guru. But he who gives knowledge to the people in the four ashramas and who teaches about me, Krishna says, is to be worshipped on the same level as me. So glorifying first the principle of the transcendental giver of knowledge. Certainly, O Brahmana, of all the followers of the Vanashrama system, those who take advantage of the words I speak in my form as the spiritual master and thus easily cross over the ocean of material existence best understand their own true welfare. Purport. One's father is a natural object of reverence. As a religious leader who initiates one into sacred ceremonies and instructs one in general wisdom. But ultimately, the bona fide spiritual master, learned in the transcendental science, and thus able to take one across the ocean of birth and death to the spiritual world, such a guru is most deserving of worship and respect, for he is the direct representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated here. Such a guru, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, is my very form because he instructs about me and gives that realization on how, because basically Krishna's instructing through that spiritual master. 34, Krishna says, I, the soul of all beings, am not as satisfied by ritual worship, brahminical initiation, penances, or self-discipline as I am by faithful service rendered to one spiritual master. O Brahmana, now the point has come that the spiritual master gives transcendental knowledge which is basically Krishna. And then Krishna said that what satisfies me is service to the spiritual master, who, especially the spiritual master of the three different spiritual masters, spiritual master who gives transcendental knowledge. So now Krishna is going to speak about a time shared with Sudama Brahmana and he in the service of their spiritual master while they lived at the Gurukula. Oh Brahmana, do you remember what happened to us while we were living with our spiritual master? Since our guru's wife sent us to fetch firewood, and after we entered the vast forest, or twice born one, an unseasonal storm arose with fierce winds and rain and harsh thunder. Then, as the sun set, the forest was covered by darkness in every direction. And with all the flooding, we could not distinguish high land from low. Constantly besieged, attacked by the powerful wind and rain, we lost our way amidst the flooding waters. We simply held each other's hand and in great distress wandered aimlessly about the forest. Remember who's speaking here and who he's speaking to. It's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who was in the Gurukula, and was wandering about in search of firewood with Sudama, the Brahmana. So in the course of their getting the wood, they fell into a difficult situation. But don't forget who Sudama Brahmana fell into a difficult situation with. And remember also, perhaps some difficult situation in your life that you went through with someone. You shared some very intense common experience with someone. Think of someone who you shared an intense common experience with that was quite difficult perhaps, but you survived it and you came through. So that one experience that you both shared becomes a source of the depth of your relationship. And when you share something with someone that is difficult, it's a common bond for your entire life. So just imagine having shared this experience of being lost in the dangerous and uncomfortable situation in a forest while gathering firewood for the guru's wife, Asandipani Muni, and his wife, and it starts raining and it's flooding everywhere and it's so dark and the sun sets. You were sent out in the winter to gather wood so that the cooking could be done, so that Sandipani Muni could be warm. And then you're stuck and you're caught and it's raining and it's thundering and it's dark and you don't know where you are and you're a young boy and you're holding Krishna's hand in great distress. You're just together, it's just you and that person, you're shivering and all night long you're together, so cold. So just imagine the intimacy of that time. And then also, just imagine or understand that Krishna is the supreme controller. So he's caused, ultimately he or is, or the, you could say ultimately he, or for the pleasure of Krishna, this experience has been arranged so that the intimacy, the rasa, the taste, the experience of Krishna being so intimate with his devotee and his devotee being so intimate with him can be relished by both, not just by one, not just by Sudama, not just this experience being close to Krishna gives pleasure to Sudama, but it also gives so much pleasure to Krishna because the shared intimacy between between Krishna and his devotee is so great. Krishna and his devotee means Krishna and those who love him. And we know this, that Krishna also experienced pleasure and experiences pleasure, but also in this specific case, experienced pleasure, because as soon as he saw the Brahman, he embraced him so heartily, and he felt transcendental bliss by the embrace, sharing that. So that wasn't just out of nowhere, but that means also that when they were together, Krishna shared the intimacy of this amazing event, just as Sudama did. So they were constantly besieged by the powerful winds and rain. They were lost amongst the flooding waters. They simply held each other's hands and in great distress wandered aimlessly about the forest. And the purport in one of the comments indicate that the two boys were wandering around. They didn't let go of the firewood that they were carrying because they were carrying this as their service. So they, despite the difficulty, they didn't let go of their service to their spiritual master. So ideal in every way, and acting on so many different levels, on teaching levels, on rasa levels, on different lila levels, these pastimes are exhibited. Then they spent the entire night in that way, in great distress. How is it possible that Krishna, who's composed of ecstasy, his body is sat, chit, and ananda, so it's eternal, so what is he afraid of? He's in ecstasy, so what is the cause of his distress? His body is composed of ananda, what's the cause of distress? And he has full knowledge. He is the source of the chit shakti, and his body is made of knowledge. So he's lost his way, and amongst the flooding waters. So obviously, Krishna's consciousness is compressed by this, so the lila can go on, so he can experience the intimate relationship with Sudama, so Sudama could experience the intimacy of the relationship with Krishna, and also other things can also happen as well. So all night, not for 15 minutes or an hour, but it became dark in the winter, say Ujjain in the winter is, say if it's pretty much like Vrindavan in the winter, so that means at 5:30 or so it starts to get dark, and it doesn't get light again until 6:30 in the morning it starts getting light. So that means for 12 or 13 hours the two of them, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his Brahman and devotee Sudama, were together and shivering and cold and fearful, wondering, are we ever going to become saved from this difficulty? Will we survive the night? Will we catch pneumonia? Well, who knows what they were thinking? But they were together, very, very intimately sharing this. And then, after sunrise, that means again after 13 hours or so, our guru, Sandipani Muni, understanding our predicament, set out after sunrise to search for us, his disciples, and found us in distress. So when Krishna and Sudama were discovered by Sandipani Muni, Sandipani Muni saw them. And just imagine how much anxiety he was in when you ask to do someone to do some service and then they get it and then they're lost. So So he was worried about them, feeling, oh, why did we send them out? Who knows what? But yet they had done service for him. Try to conceive of, though we can't conceive of it, of course. But the relief when Krishna was finally found, he sent out so many disciples. All the disciples went out into the forest calling for Krishna and Sudama. And then they finally found them. And how happy Sudama and Krishna were, and how happy everyone was. And Sandipani Muni, the boys were brought before Sandipani Muni. And texts 40 through 41 and onward are his words. All my children, oho he putraka yuyam, oh, you are my children. You have suffered so much for my sake. The body is most dear to every living creature, but you are so dedicated to me that you completely disregarded your own comfort. This indeed is the duty of all true disciples, to repay the debt to their spiritual master by offering him with pure hearts their wealth and even their very lives. So what does it mean with pure hearts? It means without wanting anything in return. It means with gratitude, with affection. Purport. One engages one's body to realize one's purposes, one's own purposes. The body is also the basis of the material conception of I. But one's fortune is the basis of the conception of mine. What I have gathered is mine. Thus, by offering everything to the spiritual master, one realizes oneself to be an eternal servant of the Lord. The spiritual master does not exploit the disciple, but rather engages him fully in Krishna consciousness for the disciple's eternal benefit. Tushto aham, I am satisfied with you. Bo, O my dear ones, Dvija Shrestas, you are the best of the Dvijas, the Brahmanas, or the twice born. Satya Shantu Manorataha, may your desires, he's blessing them, may your desires be all fulfilled. Chandas Chandamsya Yata Yamani Bhavan Bhavan Tveha Paratracha. You boys are first class Brahmanas, and I am satisfied with you. May all your desires be fulfilled, and may the Vedic mantras you have learned never lose their meaning for you in this world or in the next. So this is the blessing. Purport. Cooked food left sitting for 3 hours is called yatayam, indicating that it has lost its taste. And similarly, if a devotee does not remain fixed in Krishna consciousness, the transcendental knowledge that once inspired him on the path will lose its taste or meaning. The Sandipani Muni blesses his disciples that the Vedic mantras which reveal the absolute truth will never lose their meaning for them, but will remain ever fresh in their minds. So those are the words of Sandipani Muni. Very, very heartfelt, grateful, and full of blessings and relief. And then Krishna continues saying to Sudama, so that after speaking about that event of the path, Krishna says, we had many similar experiences while living in our spiritual master's home. And simply by the grace of the spiritual master, a person can fulfill life's purpose and attain eternal peace. And Sudama said, this is the first words that we hear. From Sudama, after seeing Krishna. What could I possibly have failed to achieve, O Lord of Lords, O Universal Teacher, since I was able to personally live with you, whose every desire is fulfilled at the home of our spiritual master? That's what it means to be the Supreme Lord, that all his desires are fulfilled, because he has an Icha Shakti, a potency, and he's unlimitedly powerful. He has that Icha Shakti that specifically fulfills his desires. But then one can ask the question, if all his desires are fulfilled, does he desire us to go back home to him in the spiritual world? And if all his desires are fulfilled, how come some of us are lingering in the material world? What do you think about that one? Or is this some exaggeration? What do you think like that one.
The desires are reciprocation. And therefore, it gives us that independence.
Yeah, it has to do with independence. And it can't be done just by fear. And if you don't love me, I'm going to keep beating you with the material energy. Yes, I'll love you. Yes, I'll love you. Just stop beating me. Because that isn't love, and it's not what Krishna desires. So therefore, bhakti really is on the platform of liberation. Bhakti has to be on the platform of liberation after one is free from all the material energy, because on that platform love can take place, and then the reciprocation truly takes place there. Anyone want to comment on that? On that point? Some comment was brewing at some point.
Even one who has all desires fulfilled enjoys it better when some things are coming on their own accord rather than in response to our desire.
That's the independence point. Yeah. Otherwise, if all your desires are fulfilled and there's no independence, first of all, then there's no relationship. Independence means relationships. Because you can't have a relationship with something that has no consciousness. And consciousness means it's going to be dependent. Excuse me, it's going to be independent. That's what consciousness means, basically. That there's free will in there. So there's no satisfaction in relationship unless there's willingness on the part of the other. And there won't be any surprise either. And then without surprise, Krishna can't be complete. Did I interrupt your thought, or did I complete it, sort of, or then something? Did you want to say anything else? Anyone else want to speak on this point, say anything on this point?
Yesterday I got a letter from someone on Krishna.com challenging me, you know, not challenging, but, you know, how could there be a God? Why does he create a world where there's so much suffering? And he could make it nice if he wanted to, and he could bring us all back to him, you know. So that proves there's no God.
So not a very original thought, but
he was adamant about it. Anyway, that's exactly what I wrote him, just that, you know, we have our independence in mind.
So I even know one devotee who had suffered, and he was so angry at Krishna for giving him the independence. Mm-hmm. He was actually angry, furious at Krishna. Very talented, intelligent fellow. I mean, not intelligent enough to overcome that. But why did Krishna give me the independence and the free will that causes me to turn my back on him? But what is the meaning of relationship? And also, instead of looking at it that way, look at it the other way, that he's given me this, so I should use it. Use it in a way that will be pleasing to him.
The hard part is when sometimes you feel like you do have a desire to know Krishna, to be with Krishna, to serve Krishna. You know, I mean, sometimes you feel that you really want that, and nothing seems to change.
You mean nothing seems to change? Meaning, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, you know, your material existence goes on, and you, I don't know, don't feel a whole lot closer to Krishna or a whole lot more aware of Krishna.
And then what do you do? Okay, so that happens. Say it happens once, and then you notice nothing changes. Then another time you feel want to be closer to Krishna, and you do it again, and nothing changes. And then it happens a third time, and you ask that question. Maybe there's something else I should do, maybe some adjustment, because I see that I have these fleeting desires to be close with Krishna, and nothing's changed in the world. So when we see that nothing's changing, we turn. Who do we mean that nothing's changing? What exactly do we mean that nothing's changing? With what? With the universe? With Krishna? He hasn't done it yet.
My relationship with Krishna.
Okay, but where is the frustration pointed towards? Why hasn't Krishna done something? But then, usually when you point towards Krishna with why hasn't Krishna done something? I've wanted to become close to him. Why hasn't he done anything? So then, what you do is you turn that around and you say, well, why haven't I done something if I want to be closer to him? And then from that, a door opens to, well, what should I do then that will bring me closer to him? Is there anything that I can do? I want to become closer to him. So therefore, is there anything I can do to become closer to him? Instead of saying, I wanted to become closer to him and then the door closed again and I didn't get closer to him. Well, while the door's open, is there anything I can actually do? In other words, put the onus of action and desire on ourselves. Do you follow what I mean?
I follow what you mean, but I don't know, I guess somehow you think, or I think, or the thought comes that you take one step to Krishna, he takes 10 steps to you. Krishna says that all of them surrender and survive are reward accordingly.
That's my point. That's exactly my point. That just saying that I want to become closer to Krishna, I say now and then I think of that. So then that's when you take the one step. That isn't the one. The first time it was the one step, but the fifth time it wasn't the one step. Then you have to take your step. So what's the step? Well,
surrender. That's a nice word, you know.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying. When you think in that way, then Krishna will let you know what's the next step. You personally, as opposed to what should we do?
Yeah.
But that's my.
No, maybe the message is encoded. I can't read it. I need
Prabhupada's going to tell you.
No. Sometimes we have to ask the question to Krishna. What do you want me to do? I have to 10 times a day. But then you have to be able to hear the answer. That's the problem.
Or you have to.
Usually he opens it up and you have to be able to read the situation.
But it's written in another language.
It certainly is.
Maybe he wants you to be patient. Just keep knitting. Don't worry about it.
I'm knitting for Krishna.
Well, that's what I mean. Okay. Did you want to?
What I want to say is that this free choice is what makes spirit different from matter.
Yes, specifically.
Otherwise, there would be no difference from matter.
Specifically, then.
Is this Rishi Hari's house?
Sounds like it might be.
It looks totally different now.
Yeah, it does. It does. It does.
Okay, let's go on with the Bhagavatam. What could I possibly have failed to achieve, O Lord of Lords, O Universal Teacher, since I was able to personally live with you, whose every desire is fulfilled at the home of our spiritual master? So also, within this, what could I possibly have failed to achieve, O Lord of Lords? So on one hand, externally, he appears to have not achieved anything from the material point of view. He's fallen way behind. He's impoverished. He's so impoverished that doesn't have enough to eat. He doesn't have enough clothing to wear. But taking the clue from Prabhupada, because of the intimacy of his relationship with Krishna, his bhajan, his meditation and service in that relationship, he's not feeling that at all. He's feeling, what could I have possibly have failed to achieve? Which means, what have I have achieved everything? I thought it sounded like you.
Got it.
So here is the comment of Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on this verse. So he was decidedly, expressively feeling that he had achieved everything, especially the fruit of his bhajan was that he was now in the presence of his Lord and Master and friend Krishna. Read Krishna's comment 44. Sadama said, "What lack of bliss was there for us? It was completely blissful for us to live in the Gurukula, where every desire becomes fulfilled. Living in the Gurukula was by your wish alone. The difficulties of wind and rain we encountered while fetching wood were due to your own desire, since you wanted to teach devotion to the spiritual master. Other than that, what power do the wind and rain have over you?" Krishna Chakravarti Thakur continues, Taittiriya Upanishad says, "Vishashman vata pavate. The wind blows out of fear of you. It was my great fortune to have lived there with you." And then the final verse in this chapter. "Almighty Lord, your body comprises the absolute truth." So he knew who Krishna was in the form of the Vedas and is thus the source of all auspicious goals of life. "That you took up residence at the school of the spiritual master is simply one of your pastimes in which you play the role of a human being." So that's the final verse of this chapter. I wanted to read just another example or two of how Prabhupada used the pastime of Sudama Brahmana in his preaching. And then one quotation from the Nectar of Devotion about their relationship. So first, another Brahmachari Gurukula training point. "Not that Guru," this is in Bombay, 1976 also, "not that Guru is not here and so much foodstuff that he eats sumptuously and sleep 24 hours. That is not Brahmachari. We should be very careful. Without the order of Guru, of course, our students are trained up. They ask permission. But here it is said that they should not ask permission even. If the Guru calls him, then he can take, then he can eat. Otherwise, if the Guru has forgotten to call him somehow or another, so he should starve, so he should fast on that day." So the Gurukula was very, very, very strict in that way, because, again, the purpose was to teach full control over the mind, because it is the mind, as the Avanti Brahmana explained, that is the mind that is the cause of all our troubles, all difficulties, all entanglement in the material world comes from the mind. So this is true training, especially as a brahmachari in the Gurukula, which causes and incites the full control of the mind. So Prabhupada continues, so after speaking about that discipline. "So this is discipline and hardship, voluntary hardship. The brahmachari may come from the royal house, just like our Krishna is actually the son of Vasudeva, and he was a brahmachari. So when Sudama Vipra," Krishna was supposed to be a kshatriya and Sudama Vipra was a brahmana, "so brahmanas and kshatriyas are especially meant for going to the Gurukula and live very strictly according to the principles of Gurukula. So Krishna and Sudama Vipra went to collect dry fuel from the woods. When Sudama Vipra came to Krishna's house, he reminded Dwarka, 'My dear Sudama, do you remember that day that both of us, we went to the forest and there was a cyclone and rain, we could not come out? So that means so much painstaking for the matter of Guru. One cannot refuse that I'm coming from a very rich family. Why should you ask me to collect some? I can purchase it. I have money." "No,
if you have to. Here it is said that the Brahmachari Guru Kule Vasandanto Gurohitam Acharan Dasavan Nicha. Even if you're coming from a royal family, even if you're coming from the very respectable Brahmana family, when you're under the control of Guru, you should act just like a servant. And what kind of a servant? Menial servant. Nicha. Not that I'm a very rich man's son, you're asking me to do this, no, I cannot do it. No. This is called tapasya. Tapasa brahmacharyena. So Prabhupada, so to do this, one has to see one's actual position, one learns humility, one has to think of oneself as a servant, not as a master, and the mind rebels. Of course, when one's young, the mind doesn't rebel in the same way that an adult's mind rebels, or even a teenager's mind rebels. When one is young, one sees all the adults as very big, and one is small, and naturally one will, could take to this type of discipline. And then Prabhupada continues. Very interesting. So it is very difficult at the present moment to introduce all these principles, because the days are different. If we would become very strict, so then ordinarily they're not coming. There is no such strict principle. And we are constructing very nice palatial buildings with a tent, bathroom and everything complete. Still people are not coming. So he's saying if we were strict, it would even be, I mean, half is empty. If it's empty already, and there'd be half as many people coming. This is a different day. So it is very difficult, topsy-turvied. But there is only one way. So in this Kali Yuga, if it is too strict and there's too much emphasis on the disciplines, then even those who wish to come will not be able to come or will not be able to stay. But, Prabhupada said, even though everything is upside down, there is only one way. And that is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Although this age is full of faults, kalo doshan adhe rajan, Sukadeva Goswami said, my dear king, like the ocean of faults, my dear king, Prakrit Maharaj, I have described so many faults of this age, and you must be perplexed. It is just like the ocean of faults. But there is one benefit that is specifically, especially for this age. What is that? Kirtanadeva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Parambhaja. If simply this system is introduced, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Kirtanadeva Krishnasya. So that is our hope in Kali Yuga. I remember one time in Melbourne, I think it was 1974, Prabhupada was speaking on there was a whole bunch of the young boys and young girls in his room, maybe 10 or 12, 14, 20, I don't think very many people were over 25, certainly no one was over 30. And Prabhupada said that if one remains celibate between the ages of 16 and 21, one's brain becomes so fertile for spiritual realization. And then he looked around at all the young boys and girls from Australia and who were thinking, oh no, what have I done with my life? And then Prabhupada just looked and said, but if you chant Hare Krishna, everything will be all right anyway. So that was the hope, the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu coming through the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. But one can ask the question, as was also asked, will be asked a little later, actually, it's in that question. Then why is it that there are very few success stories even? The Hare Krishna Mantra is there, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is there, Prabhupada's books are there. We sometimes even want to serve Krishna. But why don't we gain the success? And the and Kirtanadeva Krishnasya is there. The holy names are there, and there's Kirtan. And there are many answers to that question. Srila Jiva Goswami answers that question by saying offenses. He actually says there's no other reason. And to doubt that is offense to the holy name. If we doubt the potency of the Maha Mantra, that's another Harinama kalpanam, to think it's just some product of our imagination. So it's offenses. But as Prabhupada explains in Janmaiswarya Sutta Sri Dhira Edamanam and Alpamam, in that verse, he explains there's a quality of the chanting that has to be there. And this is, and this is an essential point. And I've actually heard, I listened to a lecture where Prabhupada said, mechanical chanting is also an offense. So there has to be a quality of the chanting. And what's the quality of the chanting that's required that brings the result that we are so much desirous of? It's not mechanical, it's not just doing it, but it's told very clearly by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that's Trinada Krishna, that one has to chant in a humble state of mind. And what does that mean? It means taking shelter of Krishna's holy names. It means chanting while acknowledging all the things that Prabhupada is saying here, that everything is topsy-turvy, and not only the age is full of faults, but also I'm full of faults. Especially I'm full of faults. There's so much insincerity, there's so much material desire, there's so much craziness of mind. So therefore, all holy names, all Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all Krishna, all Srimati, unless you are merciful to me, what hope do I have? You've come in the form of the holy names. Let me chant with that type of intensity of taking shelter. Like there's a story that I heard. It's not a devotee story, it's like a Hitopadesh type of story, where a group of dogs were sitting together. I've mentioned this before. And suddenly they saw a rabbit. And one of the dogs, they were all hungry, as dogs tend to be, went running after the rabbit. And the rabbit, seeing the dog chasing him, went running like anything to save his life. So the dog went running after the rabbit and barking, and the rabbit took shelter of ran like anything until he found some sticker bush. And he ran inside the sticker bush, and this was terrified and shaking. And the dog barked and barked, but the rabbit wouldn't come out. He was safe inside the sticker bush, and the dog couldn't get in. So when the dog returned to his dog friends, he was heard to have said that other dogs started laughing at him. Oh, you couldn't catch the rabbit. Aha, you ran after the rabbit. This little rabbit, you couldn't even catch him. Ah-ha-ha-ha. And the dog replied very wisely, "It is not surprising that I could not catch the rabbit, because I was running for my meal and he was running for his life." So there's a difference, as Prabhupada said, in the quality of one's chanting. If we are chanting for our life, when we so much want Krishna service, the service of Braj, the service of Vrindavan, the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we want this. But because we are topsy-turvied, not only is the world topsy-turvied, when we see our own topsy-turviedness, our own faults as the thing that is getting in the way, and we call out for the mercy of the holy names and we chant in that spirit. That is the kind of chanting that gives us Kirtaniya Siddha Hari, that will give us the results that we actually are longing for. So that's what Prabhupada's point was here. It's simply this system is introduced, the Hare Krishna mantra, Kirtana Deva Krishnasya, when the topsy-turviness is overcome. Here's another example of Prabhupada's using this pastime in his preaching, mentioning it. This is in Delhi, early 1971. So Prahlad Maharaj recommends Komaram Achiret Pragyo Daman Bhagavatari Ha. From very childhood. It is not that it is reserved for our old age occupation. Sometimes we think like that, that at the present moment we are young, let us enjoy life. And at old age, when you are old enough, preparing for death, at that time we may try to understand what is Krishna consciousness or Bhagavad Dharma. But Prahlad Maharaj says no. The children should be taught from the age, as we send our children to school in a minor age. Similarly, we should send our children to understand this Bhagavad Dharma. I am very pleased. I've seen practically that in Delhi, the Muslim children are given instruction of Quran from very early age. Actually, this should be done for everyone. I am very pleased. Not I am pleased, I may be pleased or not, but that is the way of life. A human child should be given instruction about Krishna consciousness from the very beginning. And that was our Vedic system, Brahmachari. Brahmachari should go to the house of the teacher or spiritual master at the age of 5 years old, and he should remain there for 20 years to understand the value of life. And the Brahmachari would accept any kind of menial work for satisfying the spiritual master. It is said, Nichayeva, just like menial servant, the Brahmacharis, they're instructed, you should accept the order of the spiritual master just like menial servant. And in young age, they do not mind. They do not have any false prestige that I'm coming from such and such respectable family. My father is so rich. Even Lord Krishna, he accepted this Brahmachari ashram. When Sudama Vipra met him, when Krishna was the king in Dwarka, so friendly talks, and Krishna reminded Sudama Vipra, my dear Sudama, do you remember that one day we went to the forest to collect fuel, and there was heavy rain, and we could not come out, and then we stayed the overnight on top of the trees? The next day, Guru Maharaj came and he rescued us. Do you remember that? And Sudama Vipra said, yes, I remember. So even Lord Krishna, what to speak of others? This was the system to teach from the very beginning of life, this Bhagavatam. One can get perfection, even becoming a Sudra, provided he is properly guided. Not that only the Brahmanas can become Krishna conscious. No, the Sudras can also become, provided he is guided by the Brahmana. At the present moment, the whole society is full of Sudras. There are no Brahmanas, so you have to train real Brahmanas. How respectfully received that Sudama Vipra was, and not because he was a caste Brahmin. The Prabhupada told those stories and those instances, those times, to make these different preaching points. It was a very heartfelt point for Prabhupada. Now, the last one we'll read here is from Nectar Devotion, but just to give the example of one of the qualities of Krishna, that he's controlled by love. Krishna becomes obliged, this is from Nectar Devotion, 40th quality. Krishna is controlled by love. Krishna becomes obliged to the loving spirit of the devotee, and not exactly to the service rendered. No one can serve Krishna completely. He is so complete and self-sufficient that he has no need of any service from the devotee.
It is the devotee's attitude of love and affection for Krishna that makes him obliged. A very nice example of this obligatory behavior was manifested when Sudama Vipra went to Krishna's palace. Sudama Vipra had been a class friend of Krishna's, and due to his poverty, he was induced by his wife to see Krishna to request some aid. When Sudama Vipra reached Krishna's palace, Krishna received him very well, and both he and his wife washed the feet of Sudama Vipra, showing respect to the brahmanas. Remembering his loving affairs with Sudama in their childhood, Krishna began to shed tears while receiving him. So this is Krishna. This is Krishna. Bhava Grahi Janardana. Verse that point is reflected in. At that time, Lord Achyuta, when Sudama just enters, was seated on his consort's bed, spotting the Brahman at some distance. The Lord immediately stood up. He recognized him immediately. He immediately recognized him, even though he had grown up so much. Krishna went forward to meet him, and with great pleasure, he embraced him. The lotus-eyed Supreme Lord felt intense ecstasy upon touching the body of his dear friend, the wise Brahmana, and thus he shed tears of love. We had read that before. Nivritta Prita Vimunchat. From his eyes were released Bindu Netrabhyam Pushka Iksham. From his lotus eyes we released tears of love. So then the question still remains. Why was Sudama Brahmana suffering so much? Most of the answer was that we had so far was that he wasn't suffering. He was ecstatic. He didn't notice it, practically speaking, in his bhajan. Nor did he ask Krishna for anything. Because of the intense absorption. So when we are not intensely absorbed within, then it's hard for us to understand, as if because of the tendency to think everyone is thinking, experiencing and thinking what we're thinking. But due to Sudama Vipra's intense absorption within, he had no experience of his body, practically speaking, or any inconvenience to his body. Okay, we'll stop here. And that question will it's addressed later on in one of the comments. One of the purports and Vishnu Chakravarti comments as well. Thank you. Any questions or comments? What time is it now?
1:45.
You said. Yeah,
question from last class. You shared with us a nice story of Yudhishthira Maharaj that for short duration he had to go to hell and then he went to Sarvaloka. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 18 verse 66, Lord Krishna says Mam Sarvam Vraja Mam Aham Sarvam Papo Bhayo Mokshasami. So if Lord delivers anyone of sinful reactions, why did Mr. Maharaj have to go to hell? Why not to Goloka?
He didn't go to hell. He had to. He took a visit. He passed through. And the reason that was given, and Prabhupada told me this, is because he didn't surrender. It wasn't because of his surrender. Is because when Krishna told him to lie, he couldn't do it. So his principle of dharma, of mundane religiosity, of honesty, which is a good principle, which is a wonderful principle, but when it's conflicting with what Krishna specifically wants you to do, to uphold the principle born of the mode of goodness over Krishna's desire, which is the higher principle, is irreligious. So because of his lack of surrender to Krishna's desire, he had to see that hell situation and see Duryodhana and Swarga at that time. But he wasn't bound for hell and he wasn't bound for Swarga. He was an eternal associate of Krishna. But he and also but also he was Dharmaraj. And also it's Leela. Ultimately it's Leela to make this point. That the highest religious principle is to do as Krishna wants.
Maybe it's to be answered later on, like you were saying, but it seems unusual that Sudharma Vipra, who seems like a pure devotee from the description, that he's not seen that his wife's suffering as well. Mm-hmm. Because usually a pure devotee is very conscious of other people's difficulty.
It doesn't say he wasn't concerned about her at all, but it doesn't expressly mention. I mean, never mind, I'm not eating, but she should have enough to eat, something like that. Well, they went, yeah.
Ultimately, he went.
Excuse me?
Ultimately, he went.
On her order.
Her suggestion, you mean? Humble request, yeah.
Shri Shantikari Thakur comments on the seventh verse that his wife had similar qualities such as toleration of hunger, among many qualities. She tolerated even more than he. So she had the same qualities.
Yeah. But you might be able to tolerate yourself, but like she couldn't, I think about Prabhu's point is that she couldn't tolerate his inconvenience. So how is he able to tolerate her inconvenience? I think that's his point. So it's one thing being tolerant, but they were both a transcendental team. It seems they were both basically on the same level of Krishna consciousness, of depth of Krishna consciousness. And it's also when people are very very deep. The way that they see things are different from the way I see things. So it's hard to judge the mind, and because we're basically saying, well, if, I may not even be a pure devotee, but even if the hunger didn't bother me, if I was in that situation, I would certainly be worried about my wife's situation. But they were both on a very extreme level. Of depth of Krishna consciousness, and we have to remember that Sudama's consciousness was so deep that when Krishna saw him, he embraced him, and he felt ecstasy, even though his quote material body was so impoverished and unattractive. Krishna felt ecstasy, so we can see that obviously he's not an ordinary person. And neither is his wife, because he's a pure devotee and she's serving a pure devotee. She's serving such an exalted person and she's on, practically speaking, an equal level of exaltation and of selflessness. So her bhajan, his bhajan is deep learning and meditation. And her bhajan is her service. And must be something wonderful they're experiencing, obviously. There's a famous Vrindavan story of Raghunath Das Goswami on the bank of Radhakund crying and crying and crying, completely thin, just being just like bones, because he's not eating. And he's crying. So someone sees him and asks him, he sees he's so thin and he's crying. He said, well, if you're so hungry, and therefore it's causing you to cry, why don't you just go home to your family house? You're from a wealthy family. Mm-hmm. So with his mind, he's judging something that is beyond his capacity to judge. And that wasn't the case at all. His crying is about something completely different. Mm-hmm. And the food, the
Prithuga.
Any other questions or comments?
Regarding the discussion, you mentioned that someone was blaming Krishna. In fact, it's a very interesting point. According to Lord Brahma in 10.14.8, Tateno Kaham Vasamikshanana, and according to the Bhagavad Gita 5.16, especially commentary, but...
What is the 5.16 verse in Bhagavad Gita?
Nada peka se chit pavam nachaiva sukritam ibu. Krishna doesn't give anybody piety or sin, and when the sun, true knowledge awakens, it reveals everything like the sun. So the acharyas say that this knowledge, sun-like knowledge that reveals everything, is the knowledge that Krishna is not to be blamed, that he is completely fair and just.
This is in 5.16.
That's 4.17. That's the knowledge.
5.17.
These two verses. One is that Krishna doesn't, is not...
which are the two verses?
5.16 and 17.
Yes, okay.
The next one is about sun-like knowledge.
Yes.
So, in other words, the thing that holds us conditioned is exactly this point of blaming Krishna, thinking that Krishna, that he is somehow partial or unfair, even as devotees.
Yeah. There's another interesting point parallel to this, is that Krishna's mercy is causeless, and Krishna's mercy very much is his kindness. Is it comes in the form of association and seva, service that we should do. So if we see that Krishna has given someone else service or an association out of his causeless mercy, and he hasn't given it to me, to blame Krishna for not giving it to me and to become upset with him is misunderstanding the nature of what causeless mercy is. And one rather, and there's actually envy in the heart if one does that, which is basically what you're saying, that the acharyas are saying, that it's not fair that Krishna doesn't give me what I want. Who does he think he is? The independent supreme personality of Godhead or something? And because that's what causeless mercy actually means, that he can dispense it just as he desires, and there's nothing we can do to force him to make him do what we want him to do, which is very hard for a conditioned soul to accept, that we're helpless and fully dependent on him. So to somehow accept our position and accept that he's causelessly merciful and go on serving him with great... there's also another really... There's one little story of Santo Francesco, but there's also one with it's a comment to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur when he says that, I can't remember the circumstance, but what he says could be Napariyoham or there's one very wonderful comment where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, "My Lord knows just what I need."
Was it also in the Rasa Lila where Krishna says that I do not respond to the prayers, and that's my mercy?
Yeah. But there's somewhere where the devotee is saying, "My Lord knows just what I need," and also the story of Francesco, you have to go like this with me. when he was once very, very, very sick, he was so surrendered, and he was so sick, and one of his close associates, I've told this before, one of his closest, I can't remember his name, one of his students said, so Lord, it's, you know, you're so sick and your Lord is so responsive to you. What, just why not pray to him just a little bit to remove a little bit of your suffering so at least you can do your service? Because it had been going on for a long time. And he turned to him and said, if I did not know that these words had come from the simplicity of your heart, I would never look at your face for the rest of my life. And then he threw himself on the ground and said, my Lord, I don't ask for anything like that. You do with me as you want. I'm yours. You do with me as you want. Very heavy to be fully surrendered. Fully surrendered. Any other questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Excuse me? Francesco. From Sleepy the Dog, we learn how determined we have to be, also, if we want. Because Sleepy is so fixed and focused on what she wants. And she doesn't see anything else. She sees the whole point of the existence of the universe is to provide her something to eat and a place to sleep and warmth. And she's not getting it and she's not satisfied. But she's so focused. She's such a...
But even though she doesn't get those things, she's still very faithful to her.
She's completely faithful. She never goes. Although she doesn't mind jumping the fence every once in a while and get a chapati. You hear her at the door. Guess who's still out here? And when she's going, she's trying to say, Sari Ra Vidya Jal Vipendra Taikal. So. And every once in a while you think, she's not an ordinary dog, she's a Brijbasi dog. And she said, who knows what she's, what consciousness is really like. And then she'll do something completely dog-like, you know, and abominable, like terrorize a smaller dog and rip it apart, or catch a monkey or something, or eat something that can't even mention. Okay, well, and so tomorrow the conclusion is we shall meet here. Is that all right? Same time, same place. And we'll be speaking about concluding the Sadama pastime. This woman, and Rahu is eating the sun. Yeah.